And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And how's your week been, Andy?
Look, Nick, I won't lie. You know, I think one of the competitive advantages of this pod, and we've always been, if we have any, but we've always been proud of the fact that we go back and we watch the games again. We don't just sort of spout our opinions without at least, you know, testing them a second time to see what happened. And Nick, I'm not going to lie, it was a really tough tape watch this week.
I really enjoyed mine. It was frustrating that it gave out at half time, but yeah, the first half was fun.
But Nick, well done, and we'll talk about the game in a second. But before we do, I just, you know, there are certain moments in our game that sort of moments of beauty that sort of just transcend the individual contest or the result of the contest, you know, something that links us to the history and traditions of the game, you know, that's, you know, a memorable moment, and that just will stay with us for all our supporting life. And I just wanted to pay tribute to the moment where Toby Nankervis tried to decapitate Joel Selwood. Is one of those magical moments that we all go to the football to watch.
I reflexively banged my fist against my chest when you said that. I was just...
Yeah, and look, seriously though, I do feel that way about Shea Bolton's mark. I was sitting behind Jack Graham's kick, almost perfect line of the kick in, and it was when Bolton rose in the sky. It was like it was almost like, you know, someone, you know, almost ethereal or godlike, that he was just rising. You know, man temporarily flies. It was amazing to watch, and it is true that the sort of the specky is something that it's part of the longest and glorious tradition of our game. So yeah, I think we're privileged to watch it, but at least we went away with a very happy moment from the game.
I'm glad to hear that, because honestly, just on TV, it was pretty great, but for some reason I didn't quite have the emotional reaction to it that some other people did. I sort of feel guilty for it, because it's a stunning mark.
Well, it's more of an act of beauty than sort of that really fantastic goal that wins a final or in the crucial moment in the third when the game's in the balance. Like, it was in the first quarter when the game was still just getting started. So, yeah, I can see why it doesn't have that immediate gut reaction that sort of a really big goal can. Also, he did kick goal, obviously. But there's just something about it that afterwards I was just, like, I almost got emotional the next day reflecting on it, like just this sort of moment of transcendent beauty from the game. So, yeah. So, you know, what does it matter in the end? Well, it's worth one goal. But it's still special, and it would just, you know, when we think of Bolton's career in years to come, which hopefully will go for Richmond for a much longer time, you know, one of the special moments we'll always remember.
It was pretty great. If you were just to run a highlight reel of our goals together, there'd be a fair bit of Bolton in them.
And a fair bit of good Bolton too.
Which freaks me out, since he's not going to be in the team for the next couple of weeks.
Yes. It is of great concern, and sort of, you know, bouncing around the cumulative injury theory, which we'll talk about in a second. Like, it is hit hard. Something actually interesting. You know, again, we don't approve gambling, but we're always interested in the gambling lines, because they're an estimate of probability of winning. When he first got injured, the line moved 1 point. So, you know, the bookmakers expect us to win by 20 points. So dropped it to about 18.5 on average. And then there was this, and that was the citizen news hit, which is about normal for, like, only really good players move the line. Like, only a dusty players move it by.
Yeah, Dusty moves it about 4 points.
Exactly. So the lines don't move a huge amount. But then you could see this sort of ripple went through the market and it dropped by more than a goal within an hour or two. And I think it's just the cumulative effect that you just look at where Richmond's injuries are. Well, they're all in one spot.
Yeah.
And it's so cumulative and potentially damaging. So, yes, you look at sort of who's going to be playing midfield for us next week. Yeah, it's it'll be a heroic victory. Anyway, we should talk about the game a bit, Nick.
Should we?
Now that we do have to be we have to briefly. It did sort of look. It's been analysed well, and like it's Wednesday. I don't think we need to go in great depth. It did have a feel that they were sort of walking through our tackles later in the game as the. They have more than 10 players with 150 games experience.
Returning to the topic of familiar themes, I was thinking, we said before about how we always lose the immediate revenge game after a grand final. It's like, damn it.
Yeah, I said that very loudly when, in a quiet moment in the third quarter, when there were several Geelong supporters around me, just to emphasise the point.
I know nobody will ever remember our 2020 premiership because we lost a regular season game to them the next year.
Yeah, it was remarkable watching the tape, Nick. There's a couple of things we've mentioned: the youth and. You know, if you go through sort of Ross, RCD, they had very little of the ball. They struggled. Mansell made a couple of terrible blues. Just little things dropping marks. And, you know, it was a bit the callowness of youth was showing. But it was also like we lost crucial goals because Broad and Vossi dropped easy marks.
I know. I had that. So I started a little thread of under the heading of defence cracked. Dropped marks, Broad, Mansell, Vlossy. And Mansell, it's not unexpected that you know, he was going to find it tough in a really high pitch game so early in his career. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we can talk about all of them individually, but the defence. The defense did not hold up like the normally when we've lost, it's a case that the midfielders look a bit embarrassed at the Monday session because they're the ones who haven't been tracking their men back. But I don't remember losing as many one-on-one matchups against Geelong or, frankly, against anyone for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the most talented forward lines that's ever been assembled, but at least in the modern era, maybe.
Well, you make Gary Rowan look good. We never make...
I know, that's exactly what I was about to say.
Rowan look good.
Yeah, I know. Like, they just... Everyone seemed to have their career day. You know, Grimes was out. Vlossy was clearly underdone.
Yeah,
There was hope that it'll all come back. But there was just players that are normally steadfastly reliable, just fell apart. And look, in the third, our midfield collapsed. And you're right. Like the inside 50 count wasn't that uneven on the game as a whole. So like I completely agree with your core thesis, but. You know, Ross had 14 touches to half time, was playing fairly well. He had four in the second half, and including an awful holding the ball decision where he held onto the ball too long when he should have just bombed it long. Rolly Collingwood-Dawkins had no possessions in the third quarter. To his credit, he had five in the last. You know, this is just sort of... Look, I don't think that's even fair to put them in the same category. I think we would expect more of Ross, given his relative experience. Maybe I'm oversimplifying there, but it was just there was a collapse of our midfield output in the third. And you know what it meant, Nick, was that we wound up wasting Jake Arts' career game.
I know. I thought in terms of two thirds of our small forward triumvirate. Yeah, Arts played really well. Rioli had some good moments, and George Castagna's first month of the season was great, and his last 3 or 4 weeks have been really substandard.
He had 10 metres gained.
Yeah.
For the whole game. That's quite extraordinary.
I think he's had one shot at goal in the past month. It has not been going well.
And look, you know, it wasn't a great game for him on the supply perspective, but Jack had 4 touches and none. Actually, when you have 4, the distribution's not that important, is it? But he was actually also down for his pressure X for the game. So look, you know, you can look up and down. You know, Nank, also beating in the ruck, got carved up around the ground.
I was interested actually that Geelong took this game so seriously that they tested out the Blitzarves thing now rather than saving it for a final.
I guess you have to go for it, but it's a fair point.
I'd be frustrated if I had to watch Rhys Stanley every week too.
Yes. Well, it was in, I don't know if he's playing this week or because his mysterious last second pullout was to do with...
it was predicted on Tuesday.
Yes. True. So, by the way, just if we're just one positive, since we're talking a lot about distribution, Bolton's, by far Bolton's best quarter was the third when everything was going wrong. And he had had 5 clearances the game, which is quite good. Echeta had 8. Prior to his injury, is there any positive things other than that you can pull from the game?
Sheds was the only injury, and it seems better than we'd feared.
Yeah, look, there's a case the game wasn't that in the crucial moments of the game, they kicked their lights out.
They did.
Now, we didn't kick in the fourth quarter, so we can't really complain that much. And it sort of felt like that, you know. That there wasn't, that we didn't have an extra gear against their big bodies, but I would recognise that. Can I go back to the Nank?
Always.
Just giving Joel Sawood, the absolute working over when he gave the head high tackle. And you know, Nick, without a doubt, Joel Sawood is my least favourite player in the AFL. Not because he's a great leader and. Not for anything off field, but just the way he plays the game, the way he gets umpired, the way he's sort of inspired a generation of people to risk concussion, to draw free kicks. The fact he didn't get that diving at the legs free kick.
I know, against Mansell.
Baker.
Oh, was it? Oh.
It was Baker. Well, anyway, we're talking about the same incident just before halftime.
The one before where he got Mansell high?
No, I'm talking about the one where it dove at Baker's feet and they scored a goal just before halftime.
We were talking about different incidences where we got really upset with Selwood.
And, you know, not shame. Not, in fact, it's not even him. It's just shame on the AFL for allowing that him to be umpired like that for so many years and encourage that poor behaviour. Anyway, I digress. Poor playing style. I mean, he's getting kicks doing it, and of course they found him not guilty for. Now I know what you mean. The where he he used his attacked Mansell with the high shot. Yep, of course he didn't get done. Another player would have got with a less storied reputation, but yes, they're somewhat protected. I will say that, I can't say who told me this, but. I do love that image of Nank like giving away a head high tackle to Selwood and really making it count, which he does in other games too. I like to picture a 12-year-old Nank standing somewhere on a rainy, wet ground in Tasmania, and his juniors, a not particularly good juniors coach, saying, "Mate, guys, lads, if you're going to give away the free kick, make it count." And Nank staring back with cold, calculating eyes, and the lesson was learned. Because, he is, if anyone gives away a free kick, Anyone makes those free kick counts, it's him. I am slightly sorry to monologue about Nank. I know you must be
shocked.
I know you must be surprised. Yeah. The Lysette suspension has me slightly worried. Nank is excellent at landing people on their shoulder, not their head, when he tackles them. But he does tackle hard, and you know, one time them, you know, it's not a perfect science. They're big men and they're flying everywhere. That, you know, there's a chance Nank at some stage might get in trouble with the tribunal, and it seems they're taking those incidents very, very seriously. But at the moment, he's wonderfully skilled at dropping people on their shoulder, not their head.
He is. And look, in a up and down season, he has been a constant. Speaking of which, look, I think we can, we've already belaboured this game enough. But yeah, if Nank has been a constant this year, so's Nathan Broad, and I think he clearly had his worst game, and sadly Noah Bolter as well. Honestly, if they can chalk it up as a learning experience and move on, which has been a strength of this group, of their ability to regroup after a loss, that'll be a positive.
Agreed. Now, Nick, I'm very happy to move on. I wanted to run something, comments that Lepic said on the radio the next day, and I wanted to get your thoughts on them. And just, I've sent them to you already, but just for the benefit of the listeners who might not have heard it, and I'm paraphrasing here rather than direct quoting, but basically he was saying, you know, at the end of 2016, we brought in Cadia, Prestia, and Nank, but since then, Lynch is the only sort of veteran high-quality depth we've bought in. At the same time, we've lost about 8 senior depth guys, including Brando. And at the same time, our draft picks aren't particularly high, so you know, they're not really, none of them are absolutely killing it at the moment. And so then, you know, the combination of not having much senior depth coming in, and also none of the young kids really kicking on yet, Bolton aside, obviously, and the rookie list kids.
We had the triple Bs last year of Bolton, Baker and Bolton. Baker and Bolton.
Yeah, but no real midfielders. Anyway, sort of the so our depth is tested, and basically, one sort of core implication of what he was saying is it time to trade in for some veteran depth? And I've got a few reactions to that. But, you know, what's your first reaction to this? Someone who's, you know, far more credible than your average hot take merchant.
Oh, I can definitely – it makes a ton of sense. The question is, what's the opportunity cost? And, you know, do you lose Nathan Broad? Do you lose Camden McIntosh? Like those sort of 15 to 22 players who you can keep with a bit more money, and that the whole AFL system is unfortunately set up like this. And you know, when you've got a number of players on big money contracts, it really limits your flexibility. I mean, Geelong have been in a pretty unique situation where they've had this sort of constant cycle of big money players finishing their careers, and that salary cap space being used for the next crop of ring chasers. But we haven't really had that, where the you know, retirements have been pretty gentle. So yeah, that we haven't really had that chance to renew, get that veteran renewal to the squad. But yeah, I think if last year was a pretty quiet off season, I think this season, particularly with all the draft picks we have, there should be a fair bit more flexibility.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree also that, you know, there is a fair bit of truth in what Lepper said. I would say that, sort of just thinking about it, it's a lot easier. Sort of veteran players, when they're coming in, most veteran players, they want playing time and they want money. and it's hard to offer that on premiership team. Yep. Like right now, we're in a 95th percentile injury run at one team.
At one position.
Apologies. And it's pretty hard to bring someone in on the, you know, 5% chance that you'll get to play five games because there might be, and then cement your spot and then roll onto a premiership. Like that, it's not that good an offer to someone who might get a starting gig at a lesser team. Because as much as we're a great club, you'd rather play AFL than VFL. Second thing is,
and the Brando thing where he got a 5-year contract, and we could never offer that to him.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to say. Is the cap is that once you start winning flags in 2016, no one wanted our players because they looked like crap because we weren't winning. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you start winning flags, everyone's desirable, everyone's a hot property. You know, Shea Bolton's having all these articles written about him at the moment, but we've had lots of contract things like that. So you don't have playing time and you don't have as much cap to offer. The other point I make about the eight people who left. Who right now is really going to help the team of the guys who left?
None of them are midfielders either.
No, exactly. Like, Brando's... Look, don't get me wrong. I'd love to have Brando. He'd be starting 22. He'd be starting 18. But he'd just be a better...
Comrade Oleg is always in our hearts.
We love them all, but, like, Brando's not going to solve the midfield problem. Someone mentioned Higgins as well, as because, you know, he did actually play some midfield in juniors and played a little bit for us. You know, Nick, he's gone more forward and less in the midfield when he's gone to the St Kilda. So that you know, as much as we'd like to have the treacherous leprechaun back, but he's not. He's actually averaging. He's had three clearances all year. Yeah. Like, he's having a great year. He's kicking almost two goals a game. So, like, don't get me wrong, he's having a good year. But, like, he's not the answer to our problem because, well, I mean, I guess he could take Georgia's spot. But, and he'd be getting game time now. So, I hope in some part his impatience, he's self-reflecting on his impatience. But, yeah, I don't think any of the eight guys are solving the problem that we've got right now.
No. No, it's a pretty when you can just only cope with so many injuries at the one position, unfortunately, and midfield is the premium position, so yeah, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, but I also agree with both your and Lipper's point that there might be a bit more trading this year.
Well, actually, that's not a bad. Segue, because we're the AFLW off season's about to commence. There's still some big issues on timing of the season and number of teams that they've got to sort out first. But sort of for the Richmond specific stuff. Mon Conti is staying on. Apparently, you know, the only question is whether it's a 1 or 2 year season. Ditto for Katie Brennan and Ellie McKenzie, which for me takes the stress and tension out of the off season immediately, because they're obviously the three players.
We should say that they're expected to sign. They haven't actually signed.
No, nobody can sign. Yet, but rumors are that they're pretty keen to say. The big name, maybe out of contract and not set in stone, is Sabs and. She's got some attention from Collingwood, apparently, and I don't know. We've talked to her about her a lot. How would you feel about that?
So Firstly, I think it would be very, very Collingwood in both the men's and women's to sign a player whose reputation exceeds their playing output. But yeah, look, as we've discussed on the pod, we've discussed it so much. She's all right, but you know, I actually think it sort of, to me, it shows a bit of maturity that they're prepared to let it go, because she was such a big name signing, and they made her the face of the club. And she hasn't quite lived up to it. But, it, you know, in the NFL, our nerd podcast that we listen to, Nick, they're always talking about, you know, it's much better to admit that you made a mistake than keeping doubling down on it. Mm. And, you know, letting her go, wishing her the best, and it's a free agent move. Salary cap can be used elsewhere. Seems really healthy for the club. And, you know, good luck to her in a next club if she does leave. But I don't think I actually think it's sort of a good sign that we're not trying to to sort of hang on to her just because she was a high-profile recruit.
And I still think, I mean, obviously, every team is always a star midfielder short, but, yeah, I think, you know, Katie Brennan, you know, making it extremely clear what a dominant forward she can be. Yeah, and Sab's not really having a role up forward. Do you take those resources and get yourself another gun midfielder? Sounds pretty good to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, or re-sign your existing gun midfielders. That would seem like very good business. And I don't know who's going to sign her, because you've got to pay her as your best player, but we're not in Natalia Harris sweepstakes, because I think she's too similar to Katie Brennan and the role she plays through.
I think she's a Richmond supporter.
Maybe. Is she? Actually, I don't mind her. She's quite aggressive as a player. I quite like the way she physically imposes herself on the game. But yeah, her output wasn't great in the second half of last year, so you can't sort of sign.
She doesn't have a ton of positional versatility either, which is...
Yeah, and I think we were much better last year when we went to just two key forwards, counting Katie Brennan as one, obviously. So we're not on the sweepstakes for that, but that'll be the story that dominates the off season. But you know, frankly, the re-signing of Ellie McKenzie is probably more important to the future of the league.
I know, and it's only unfortunate that it can't be a 10-year contract.
It is annoying how short the contracts are. Anyway, let's not get into that. Now, Nick, speaking of other things, you wanted to have a rant, I believe, about the AFL ticketing.
I did. And look, you're the one who's born this more than me because of circumstance. But I do think, and look, the club should be commended for apparently some other clubs have just put everything in the hands of Ticketek, and you know, that's like leaving a steak in front of a pit bull and being surprised when it eats it. Like, you know, that if the crisis reveals who you are for both better and worse, and I think the AFL, under pressure in the circumstances, and look, they are very tough circumstances. The normal, you know, general admission process doesn't work in a COVID world. But, you know, if in their hearts of hearts, I just feel like their preferred venue is for the big clubs is something like Docklands or the Perth Stadium. They want smaller crowds. They want reserve seats. They want to extract more money per person. They hate this walk-up culture where fans can just go along when they feel like it, because their business model is not to grow the game. It's to maximise the AFL and the revenue to the AFL. And for a competition that loves to talk about itself as if it is the game, there is an extremely crucial difference, and that difference is only being highlighted by some fairly grubby money. Stingy is the right word, but stinging fans for cash out of the current circumstances, which, you know, I think it's left a bad taste for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's not... The system's very laborious, and thank God there's been multiple games where it was only because the Richmond membership department are very responsive. Yeah, and I'm not any special member.
Bless them. On the phone, those guys are great, but tick-tick just on the other end of that, on that spectrum, and the AFL seems just fine with that arrangement.
Yeah. I mean, they are, like, there's an intersection here between overly officious COVID rules too that it's hard to know. You know, in both venues, there are people whose job is just to pay to go and tell people not to stand round in the concourses, that you must go find your seat. You know, both venues are required to hire people, you know, on penalty wages in the middle of the night just to do that job. Anyway, which, by the way, as it really makes you feel very unwelcome whenever it happens to you. But we digress. Point taken. I was grateful today. And Nick, secondly, Richmond VFL are playing on Saturday, and I can't buy tickets yet. I'm quite
frustrating about this. It is the game of the day on 7+, which is good.
Yes, but I want to go and stand in the outer and grumble under my breath about when someone drops a mark. It's more fun to do it in person. But we need to talk about Saturday night, which is, I'm obviously, speaking of which, I'm obviously thrilled to be going out to Docklands.
Well, honestly, before we talk about next Saturday night, do you want to talk about Saturday night before that? And look, I've no interest in the detail of what happened with Dan Rioli and Shea Bolton, but I do think it was a good window in why Richmond's been able to keep all its star players through an era with a system set up to stop that from happening.
Yeah, look, and you know, I think Dane Swan made that point quite strongly, and he's not always he's not always the oracle of the game, but he does speak frankly about some issues that other clubs would not.
No, and Dane Swan, you have to defer to his expertise in AFL troubles, night rife related issues for AFL players.
Yeah, but you also, like, a player who, despite being quite a colourful personality and having a very active social life, achieved at the very highest level of the game.
Yeah. Was an enormously fit athlete.
Yeah, so look, there's... So on this particular issue, I think he actually has in his rather unique and way of expressing himself, he has quite a good point. We weren't there. We weren't into it. I don't have a heart take. The only thing I will say is it was noticeable that all around the ground, and there were advertisements were about, there was a speak up if women have been disrespected. That was the big campaign at the ground. Like, it was so opposite. It was everywhere. You could not have you could not have helped but notice it, even if you're playing.
You're saying that Dan Rioli was heavily influenced by the advertising.
I'm just saying, like, you know, there's a couple of, you know, everyone has a social hot take talk about this, but if the story's to be believed, and you know, I don't want to get into it whether it's true or not, but smarter people than I, who know more than I, have accepted it on face value. Dan was doing exactly what the government's marketing campaign was saying that he should do.
Yeah. When
the main thing that is, you know, not a good idea to punch people in most circumstances, and I think Shay's learnt his lesson very much so.
I hope so. I did have the thought that, oh God, I would hate for Maurice Rioli Jr. to make his debut at the expense of Daniel. Thankfully, that doesn't look like it's going to happen.
No, it does not. Anyway, well, speaking of which, GWS.
Yep. So they've turned their season around, and their record is they're 4-4, percentage just under 100. Had a very good win against the Crows 2 weeks ago. Squeaked home against Essendon last week. And it's a bit of a rebuilt side. After losing Jeremy Cameron, who they've built their forward line around. I think that took them a while to recalibrate, but there's still so much talent there.
And also missing Cornelio. Who may be a terrible captain, but it was an amazing player in their best teams.
Yeah. And for all that chaos, they've had two of their recent high draft picks. One, Isaac Cumming, who's been a bit of a slow burn, but he's really stepped up this season. But Lockie Ash, who was fourth pick in the draft last year, just looks like he's going to be a gun. And player, I think, who'd be very close to a lot of Richmond players' hearts. Tom Green, grandson of Michael, his brother trained with us in the pre-season, but he's played really well on the weekend, and has long been rumoured as a player we've been interested in.
You know, before we played them in the grand final, Nick, once Cornelio was out, it was really noticeable how they had no highly rated mids. And now, actually, they have Taranto, Hopper, and Green are all sort of... Mm. I mean, Green's in about 70, but Taranto and Hopper, they're not absolute stars, but they're top 50. Hopper's on the AFL coaches' votes leaderboard. Like, they've got a bit of depth and versatility.
Taranto's averaging nearly 30... disposals a game. Josh Kelly, who's I'm actually keeping an eye on. He's got a super unusual contract where he can opt out and be a free agent at the end of this year, or he can opt into an 8-year, $8 million contract. And he was looking at the start of the year that no one in their right, that even North Melbourne wouldn't offer him anything close to that amount of money, but he's been playing better the last couple of weeks too.
Yeah, so their midfield is quietly extremely good.
They're all super high draft. Tom Green's the lowest drafter of the lot, and he only slipped to pick 10 because he was an academy pick.
Yeah, exactly. On the upside, Finlayson's actually been playing quite well.
Pretty good.
And he's missed a few games and he's going to miss another, so he's missing our game, which is handy. And Toby Green is obviously the star of the team.
He's clearly there. He's got 21 goals, first in the AFL in score involvements. Himmelberg.
But also sort of has heart when the whips are cracking. He really shines.
Himmelberg's pretty decent as well as he was in the grand final. He's on a short list of GWS players who can hold their head up from that game. Their depth is being tested. I know. Last week, Donny...
Huge injury list.
Yeah, last week, Donny had 12 first-rounders in their team, which is a bit less than usual for them.
Poor guys. And, of course, the sort of as you've alluded to already, their backline's a bit of a mess.
Lachlan Keith, who's been playing some fullback for them. So, this is this is a good, and Nick Haynes looks like he'll be out for another week. This is a good week for Tom and Jack to get back on track.
So how confident are you?
Oh, not at all. We're never going to win another game again, and our life is going to be unending pain from here on in.
Yeah, I've swung like a yo-yo, like the worst kind of reactive fan that, like, we win, you know, we're back. Woo-hoo! On.
Yeah, record a show on Sunday.
Premiership's on, and then we lose, and oh, God, you know, what draft picks do we have? Who can we trade for? So, I'm unfortunately now at the bottom of the roller coaster, a bit pessimistic about this week.
It is. The next couple of 2 weeks, certainly Brisbane next week looks pretty ugly. But there's light on the injury list in a couple of weeks' time. So yeah, this is a huge game if we can win.
I agree. Really, and they're ninth. We're eighth. Like it's an old fashioned 8-point game. Mm. And unfortunately, yes, I am going. I had long reserve, and the difficulty of the booking system almost gave me an excuse not to go then. But then bloody Richmond membership department was really helpful and showed me how to do it. So I've got to go now.
Bless. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy. Richmond Tiger Talk. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home. You're talking about three flags by 2020. Fitzroy has paid him off miles on you guys. And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010, Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey, he does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney. West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, surely.
By 113 points. First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers.